So I didn't really need to join the Army. And I grew up, my dad was a World War II veteran. So for the first 18 years of my life, I was in the Army. I mean, we knew how to, you know, say, you know, we treated everybody like everybody we met was an officer. So I mean, I grew up that way. I had two brothers go off to Vietnam. And so it's in the 70s and I go off to college. I got a lot of hair. I run college track. And one thing that does bring people into the military is often they're athletic. You know, so I was very athletic, but it wasn't until after my dad said, did everything backwards. I went and paid for my school. Then at the age of 30, I read an article and decided, all right, I'm going to go join the Army. So it was an article in 1989, and for you there old enough, it came out in Reader's Digest. It was actually the article on the four chaplains. And I remember reading that article, and I thought, you know, I think I could join the Army, and I'm going to join the chaplain corps. And then I told my parents I was going to do that, and my mom said, you're going to go as a chaplain? I said, no. In the Army, they have what they call a unit ministry team. They have chaplains that have their Masters of Divinity, but they have a soldier, an enlisted soldier, that supports their mission. So when they live their call, that enlisted soldier walks alongside them because they're a non-combatant. They volunteer to go into the military. They'll need a soldier to make sure they take care of them. Since I already grew up as a soldier, I figured I'd be a perfect match because we all have pastors. Sometimes pastors aren't the most organized people in the world. They're great preachers, you know, and they have a knack about them. They can counsel and do a lot of things, but sometimes going from A to B is not their skill set. All right, so I figured one thing in the military, I'd make sure I could get a chaplain, two soldiers back and forth safely, and that's why I joined. So I went to Germany for 4 years, thought this was going to be the end of it, but then I came back to Iowa, taught school. I stayed in the National Guard for 10 years. Then I went to Oregon, taught school, stayed in the National Guard for 10 years. And after 20 years, the Army asked if I want to come back on active duty, and I came to D.C. to work with General Brandt. So through that 30 years, and I just retired in October, the one thing I always stress, what I learned from this story when I talk to chaplains, are you living your call? Do you join the military as a pastor? I got enough soldiers around me. What I need is a pastor, you know, and never feel bad if you fail as a soldier, but you can't fail as a pastor, because the one thing chaplains bring that nobody else can bring is they bring hope. You know, in a time of crisis, they're the only ones that can do that. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of the story, and I'm going to focus on Chaplain Poling since he has a connection to your community. And I wrote this up called Living Your Call, The Legacy of the Four Chaplains. Clark V. Poling was the youngest of the four men of God. Clark's first letter was written to his father. It was written in square block printing and was addressed by his mother. The letter found Dr. Poling on February 1918 in a dugout on the Western Front of World War I. The letter read, Dear Daddy, gee, I wish I were there with you. Love, Clark. In exactly 25 years, that eager little boy received his wish. Clark was the seventh generation in an unbroken line of ministers to the gospel. When war came along, he did not want to go as a chaplain. I can carry a gun as well as the next guy, he told his father. I'm not going to hide behind the church in some safe office out of the firing line. His dad said, I think you're scared, Elder Poling joked. I don't think you know the mortality rate of chaplains is the highest of them all. As a chaplain, you'll have the best chance to get yourself killed, he told his son. The only difference, you can't carry a gun or kill anyone yourself. And so Clark Poling became a chaplain in the U.S. Army. Just before Clark sailed, he visited his father, and they were alone in Dr. Poling's study when Clark turned to his father and said, Dad, you know how much confidence I have in your prayers, but Dad, I don't want you to pray for my safe return. That wouldn't be fair. Many will not return to ask God for special family favors wouldn't be fair. No, Dad, don't pray for my safe return. Just pray that I'll do my duty. And something more, pray that I won't be a coward. Pray that I'll have the strength and courage and understanding of men, and especially pray that I'll be patient. And Dad, just pray that I'll be adequate. So at 12:55 on February 3rd, 1943, in the cold Atlantic Ocean, just 90 miles short of their destination, these four chaplains, Chaplain Lieutenant George L. Fox, who was a Methodist, Chaplain Lieutenant Alexander D. Good, a Jewish rabbi, Chaplain Lieutenant Clark V. Poling, Reformed Church in America, and Chaplain Lieutenant John P. Washington, a Roman Catholic, all lived their calling as men of God and displayed an act of selfless service that's still honored and celebrated today. And so these four men, two Protestants, a Catholic and a Jew from four different parts of the country, the country boy from Vermont, which was Fox, the city boy from Washington, D.C., Lieutenant Good, the slum kid from New Jersey, who actually led a gang, was Lieutenant Washington, and the parson's son from New York, Lieutenant Poling, who had first met at the Army Chaplain School, which was at Harvard at that time, and now were assigned to sail with 898 soldiers, sailors, merchant marines, Coast Guard members, DOD employees, and some civilians on this ship called the Dorchester. The four were on a rendezvous with death and a rendezvous with God. It was known as Torpedo Junction, the U-boat infested icy waters of the North Atlantic during World War II. So on January 23, 1943, when the USAT Dorchester, it used to be an old coaster steamer that carried 230 people from Baltimore down the East Coast, was pressed into military service and departed Staten Island with 902 aboard, headed for Greenland. The Dorchester was escorted by three Coast Guard cutters patrolling the flanks, and the third, Tampa, was out front about 300 yards, and it was the only one that had sonar to detect submarines. Most of the men were seasick and green with nausea, and the weather was slowing the Dorchester to about 10 knots. Moving among them were these four chaplains, a rabbi, a priest, and two ministers. The chaplain talked and listened to the men, soothing their apprehensions, offering encouragement, sharing prayers, sharing jokes. By their concern and their camaraderie with these men and one another, they brought solace to a situation that was very stressful. And every report that you read, what really made these four individuals stand out, and they actually bunked together on the Dorchester, was as they moved around, they support each other. So this is a time where you got three distinct faith groups that were linked arm in arm, and the priest would actually go down on Friday night and help the rabbis set up for service and clear the soldiers out of the way that were playing cards. So over this 10-day period, the soldiers saw these men of God doing their job. But then on February 2nd, 1943, the Tampa sonar detected the presence of a submarine. She dropped back and swept the periphery of the convoy, but failed to find the submarine's position. That evening, the Tampa returned to the patrol area up front, and the two other ships followed. The captain ordered the men to sleep in their clothing with life jackets close at hand. At this point, they're about 150 miles from Greenland. With daylight, they would have air cover, and they'd be able to reach the harbor safely. It was just after midnight on February 3rd when an enemy submarine fired a torpedo toward the Dorchester's aging flank. The missile exploded in the boiler room and destroyed the electrical system and released suffocating chlorine gas and ammonia gas. Many of the on board died instantly, and some were trapped below deck, while others jolted from their bunks, groped and stumbled their way to the decks of the stricken vessel. Taking on water rapidly, the ship began listing to starboard. It took less than a half hour before the ship was slipping into the icy waters of the Atlantic. The testimony of survivors tells us that the sole order and the only fragment of hope in all this chaos came from those four chaplains, who calmly guided the men to their lifeboats. They opened a storage locker, distributed life jackets, and they coaxed men frozen with fear over the side. And as I've done my research, you think about this. These are four people with master's degrees. One has a doctorate from Princeton, all very athletic. One was a World War II Silver Star Medal, Chaplain Fox. Just think of each one of those probably said, I probably could survive this. I probably could get the lifeboat. And yet they stood fast and sat and did what they were supposed to do, serving these soldiers that were scared and trying to get off this boat. They helped coax these men who were frozen with fear over the side. Soon the supply of life jackets were exhausted. Several survivors reported watching in awe as the four chaplains either gave away or forced upon other young men their own life jackets. These four men of God had given away their only means of saving themselves in order to save others. It was the finest thing I've ever seen or hoped to see this side of heaven, said John Ladd, a survivor who saw the chaplain's selfless act. Along with the three other chaplains, Lieutenant Clark V. Poling was more than adequate and lived his calling on this tragic night in Atlantic. 8 years later, the Reverend Daniel Poling, in honor of his son, Chaplain Poling's heroism, began a foundation to celebrate the four chaplains' acts of courage. The organization was dedicated on February 3rd, 1951, by President Harry S. Truman, and this took place at Temple University in Philadelphia. In his dedication speech, the president said, "This interfaith shrine will stand through long generations to teach Americans that as men can die heroically as brothers, they should live together in mutual faith and goodwill." So for the past 68 years, the Chapel of Four Chaplains has told the story of their faith, courage, and interfaith cooperation. You may never be asked to give up your own life jacket to save another person, but the story of the four chaplains can inspire us to reach out, give a helping hand to someone in time of need. So on this Memorial Day weekend, remember those who have served, who are currently serving, and especially those who are currently in harm's way. In the National Guard alone, just so you know, we think we're at peace. We have 24,000 soldiers annually that are deployed around the world. Finally, reflect on all those who gave the ultimate sacrifice and what this weekend was meant to offer, or honor, sorry. I thank you for letting me be a small part of your event. Keep telling this story, not only to honor the legacy of the four chaplains, but honoring those who serve in your community and who live up to those ideals. And again, thanks for hosting this event. It's special for your community. You got a special calling because of Chaplain Poling that grew up here and preached here. Again, thank you.